What are you most grateful to have experienced in your life?
Loss. Loss of family members, loss of beliefs, loss of everything. And I say that because I go back to the love your fate kind of thing. Like, when I grew up, I had so much resistance, feeling like I wish I had a father, I wish I had these people in my life. And now where I'm at, I sit from a standpoint of, I am so damn grateful that that happened, because I would not, I've been told I have an old soul so much, and I don't think I would have an old soul or a different perspective on my life if everything in my life didn't happen.
Hello and welcome to the James Zander Trip, where we dive into personal growth, consciousness, spirituality, mindset, and how we can tune into the highest version of ourselves. Joining me today is the host of the You Can Too podcast, a podcast that dives into the wisdom of entrepreneurs, creators, and thought leaders on how to win at life, both internally and externally. He's also a coach who helps people interrupt self-sabotage so they can reach the next level of their life. James Bracken, welcome to the show.
James, thank you for having me, man. I'm excited to dive into everything that you love talking on and I love talking on, and I'm excited to provide some value to your audience today.
Thank you, man. I love what you're doing with your pod. I love your presence, your confidence. And for those who are listening, James is 20 years old. It's going to be so exciting to see how your future unfolds, because anyone who's looking at you now can tell there's going to be great things in your future.
Means a lot, man. I receive that. I'm getting better at receiving compliments like that, because I think we're all in, especially entrepreneurs, people that are always, you know, trying to strive for more, it's sometimes hard to receive those kind of things. So I receive that. I appreciate that, man. Thank you. Same to you.
Your mission, as you once put it, is to help people live with more intention. What was the moment in your life where the power of intention became undeniable for you?
I think that happened when I graduated high school, as crazy as that sounds. You ever hear the quote that every man has two lives and a second one starts when he realizes he only has one? I feel as though that your second one starts when you really step into the world. And I felt like going through school, I was learning a lot of things that I'll never use in my life. And just, you know, really spending most of my time in school, of course, and just feeling like I was almost wasting my time. When I stepped out of school and I actually stepped into like what I would call like the real world, it was like my time to really explore my curiosities of what I really felt like, not only what I was here to do, but the things that I really felt inclined to go towards, whether that's the podcast or spirituality and personal development and helping other people and everything in that regard. And so I thought, you know, I lost a lot of family growing up, and that had a big impact on me wanting to live with intention and really live with more urgency. But I think when I stepped out of school, it was really this awakening of, I really can go towards whatever curiosity I feel inclined to go towards. And that's been a really exciting path so far. And I feel like I've been at it for so long and also such a short amount of time, which is weird.
Do you feel like school, like for most people, when they go through school, they're doing things they don't want to do. They're avoiding the homework they don't want to do. And so it kind of sets in this mindset of not caring about what you're doing. And that can translate to later on in life, not being intentional. When you work with your clients, how do you instill in them this intentionality?
I always like to go back to, I don't give you answers, I'm going to ask the questions. I think for a lot of people, what they think for coaches is like that they have all the answers, we're perfect, or we're going to be the thing that fixes everything in someone's life. And I just really don't look at it that way. I've seen that because I've hired coaches that didn't work out and all of that kind of stuff. I think for me, the way that I'm able to really bring out the intention behind people is, for a lot of people, we'll ask why. Like, let's say, for example, like I'll ask someone, why are you doing what you're doing? And they'll give a really basic surface level answer. And then I'm going to ask why like five more times so we can really get down to like, what's the core reason? Like at your core, why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you living? Why are you waking up every day? Why are you moving towards something? Like, why are you moving towards something if you feel like you're getting no results? That's something I feel a lot of entrepreneurs are doing, right? Like the time where it feels invisible, when you don't see the compounding happen, why are you still showing up? Really getting down to that why, because the surface level why, which most people give to ourselves, that's just not enough. And we know that's really not it. So diving deeper, I would say, really challenging people.
What is your why?
My why is to impact someone that where I once was, to be able to help someone, whether And I see this because if you've ever been in coaching in some respect, they'll tell you that you're going to help the person that you were 2 to 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in that, and I don't believe in that because most of the people I've worked with have been older than me. So I can't really say that I can help someone that's 2 years behind me or 5 years behind me because that person's still in high school, right? And so I think for me, it's helping the people that are struggling with the things that I'm able to give a different perspective on. Not to say that I'm not struggling with them myself, but to be able to give a different perspective. So I think my why is to help people that are struggling with the things that they don't need to struggle with, whether it's stress, anxiety, self-sabotage, a lot of the things that just we get in our own way, to be able to just wring it out of them is what I like to say.
What are the top challenges you see in your clients most often?
A lot of procrastination, a lot of self-sabotage, a lot of lack of belief. I think lack of belief is like at its core, like a fear, you know, that kind of thing. I think there's really three core fears that people deal with, and it's fear of success, fear of failure, and fear of rejection or judgment. And I think all three of those fears pop up in every single one of our lives, but we just keep going through things without addressing those things, and then they continue to show up. That's what really self-sabotage is like trying to do something and not recognizing the reason that there's like a wall in between of everything that you're trying to do.
It's like the metaphor I love is like driving with the emergency brake on.
Exactly.
So what is the first step that you navigate your clients through when trying to get rid of their self-sabotage or transmute it to something else?
Yeah. So there's like three core pillars that I say that, you know, when you're trying to build an offer or whatever it looks like, you have to have like a, make it sound nice, right? And the thing that I think is like the first part for me is clarify. Like we have to clarify what's getting in the way. First off, why are you standing in your own way? So what fear is popping up for you? Maybe it's a mix of all three, but usually it's a specific fear. And I'll give an example. I worked with a author that had a book ready for 8, 9 years, almost a decade, but just had so much fear of what that next step looked like. She had a fear of success because she knew that that next step looked like marketing her book, going to Barnes & Noble, getting it on Amazon, doing all of the things that it's going to require a lot more work because that next level usually requires a next level of commitment, right? She was terrified of doing that. So she just put it off for years and years and years and years. I came in and within 6 months, we addressed why is that fear there to begin with? And then also, do you really want that next level? Because some people, you might not, like that might not look like the life that you want to live. And so getting really crystal clear and like, is this actually what you want? Or is this what you think that you want or what society tells you you should want? And so if we've gotten clear on that, like the real reason why you're moving forward or if you even want to, well, then we can actually move forward with, as you said earlier, is the intention aspect. Like we don't want to just move through life just because we think this is where we're supposed to go, but actually do it because that's what you feel aligned with doing.
Do you recall what her fear was and what was the resolution of that specific case?
Yeah. So the fear was the fear of success, like the fear of like, okay, this next level is going to require next level of me. Like, do I really want to show up to the level I need to? Like if say when someone is releasing a book, you have to market that book. You go on podcasts, you go on different shows, you go and actually like put yourself out there so that you can be everywhere to promote what you're doing. And she didn't really know if that was what she wanted to do. Like she liked not having to do anything in the morning, only having to write and just being able to do whatever she wanted with the rest of her day. And so it was kind of deciding like, is this what you really want? Or is this what you think that you want? Because society's telling you that's what you should want. And so getting crystal clear on the fear of, are you fearful of being seen? Or are you fearful of taking on more? And because I think for a lot of people, we feel that it's like, oh, I don't really want to do this work. But for her, it was really being seen. And it was a lot of childhood trauma that showed up around like she didn't believe she was worthy. And so really getting to the core of that and reframing the way that she viewed herself and what she was capable of accomplishing and achieving, that's what at the core it was, because that's allowed her to actually show up without the resistance of showing up. Because a lot of people are just, like you said, it's like driving with their foot on the brake. It just doesn't work. Especially not sustainably.
Of the three major fears you listed, fear of success, fear of failure, fear of rejection, which one has been the most prevalent for you?
It's a good question. I think a mix of all three, because I don't think there's one that stands out for me. I think they all play out in most of our lives, but from my awareness of myself or like how far I've come at least, I think at first, it might have been fear of failure because that was something I struggled with growing up. But I've reframed failure as feedback, and so like I'm always trying to fail because so I can learn and get better. And I've detached myself from my failure, or at least I'm doing my best to every day. So I would say just a mix of all three. And I think a mix of all three shows up for every single one of us. Like for her, fear of success was something there, but fear of failure was still there. Fear of judgment was still there. That's why she had a fear of success, because of the judgment, right? And so I think it shows up for all of us. But for me, yeah, I think a mix of all three for sure.
One of the things you said was one of the core lessons for you in life was focus on the questions, don't focus on the answers. What are the questions you are currently exploring in your life for yourself?
Dude, I love these questions. A question that I've been really, really entertaining recently is like, what do I really want? And that sounds like such a subtle, like a really easy question, but I feel like it's one of the hardest questions that we can ask ourselves, because we have so many subconscious beliefs that we're not even aware of around why we should be moving towards this thing or why we should want this thing. I got a speaking opportunity recently and I turned it down because I thought about it. And I thought, is this something that I really want, or am I going towards this because this is what I feel like I should be doing? And as soon as I had a should in there, I immediately knew that my intuition was telling me to not do that thing. And maybe that's something I go towards in the future. Maybe speaking is something I do want to do. But right now, it feels like I should be doing that. And if there's ever a should, that's shame. That's placing an expectation. And I believe that happiness is, you know, reality minus expectations. And so I think for me, it's what do I really want? Like, what kind of life do I want to live? I had, do you know who Eric Jorgensen is by chance? He wrote the Almanac of Naval Ravikant. Definitely a book if you haven't read that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with him a few days ago and he was speaking about how he's not setting goals for the next year because he's an ambitious person. He's going to be moving in that direction anyways. Why set goals? Because it's only taking you away from the present, right? And so it was, for him, it was like, what do I really want? Asking that question and then just being in alignment with what he's doing every single day. And so for me, it's like I'm thinking in the same realm of like, okay, I'm already an ambitious person. I'm already going to be moving in some kind of direction. I can have goals as guidelines, but that doesn't have to be exactly, you know, I don't have to overly focus on that thing. And so I go back to just asking, what do I really want? Not what others expect of me or what they think I should be doing. Just being really in alignment with my values, not what I think other people should think of me.
I think you bring up such a great point in that most people don't know what they truly, truly want, and they don't spend enough time thinking about it. And I'm curious, the 15-year-old version of you 5 years ago, what did he want compared to the 20-year-old version of you now?
I think the 15-year-old version of me wanted to be liked, wanted to be seen, wanted to be accepted, wanted to be appreciated. I think all of those. And I think at our core, every one of us, like, we innately just want that. I mean, it's the herd mentality. It's like when you get kicked out of the herd thousands of years ago, you're dead. Like, that's what's going to happen. That's why status is so important. But I would say that's what I wanted then, because I didn't understand myself. Like I said earlier, like, my second life, quote unquote, started when I left high school, because I really dove into everything that, you know, you talk about. It's like diving into yourself. Like, really, like, how you feel about yourself. A quote that I always go back to is by Tom Bilyeu, and I love it. I think I said it in that 20 Questions podcast, or 20 Lessons Learned. It's that all that matters is how you feel about yourself when you're by yourself. And when I was by myself, I felt terrible growing up. I had so much anxiety. I had so much self-doubt. I had all of the things that I now talk about, because when I started my podcast, that's what I was trying to do, was I was like really just giving lessons to myself. I feel I've spoke with a lot of podcasters, and a lot of people are doing that, where a lot of the content that they make is like, I'm really talking to myself in this. In some respect, like Kyle C said it on our podcast the other day. He was like, every time he makes a video, he's saying that to himself, but he's saying it to everyone else as well. And so I think that's why it's so powerful getting into this kind of space, because you can literally help yourself as you're helping other people.
When you were going through that tough time when you were younger, you mentioned in one of your videos you were going through some depression, some anxiety. What was that around, and what was the lessons that you learned from that time?
Yeah, I think, so I lost a lot of family growing up, to give people context. My father and uncle both passed away at 37, and my grandfather passed away at 66, but he passed away a few months before his retirement. So something that was going through my mind throughout really most of my life was, why do I have no, not even just a father figure, but like no man in my life whatsoever? It was like me, my mom, my sister. And so feeling like I was not alone, but feeling like I, like life was happening to me. I just always ask that question. That's why you said it earlier. Like, you asked different questions. I always ask, why is this happening to me? And my brain would automatically give a response. And I said this recently on a podcast where you have to look at your brain like it's ChatGPT. Like, you give it a bad prompt, you're not going to get a good answer. You give it a better prompt, it's going to give you a better answer. And so my life changed when I started asking, why is this happening for me, rather than why is this happening to me? And so that's when things really changed. But I think the lessons that I learned from that time was that I am not my perception of myself. A book that I recommend, it actually, when I work with clients, we even book our first call. They have to read the book Psycho-Cybernetics. Have you heard of it?
Mm-hmm, absolutely, yeah.
A mentor of mine recommended to me a few years ago, and he didn't expect me to actually read it. And when I had him on my podcast, he was like insanely surprised that I actually went through it. But it was one of the best books that I've ever read, because I don't think, this is why I go back to school. Like, we learned in school, but like, I've learned the Pythagorean theorem like twice, and I couldn't tell you what it is right now. I couldn't recite how to do it. But what I learned in the book Psycho-Cybernetics of how my perception of myself isn't myself literally transformed my life. And so a lot of growing up was just me being in my head. Like, I went on long walks. I still talk about going on walks now, but I look from a different perspective because I feel better about myself when I'm by myself. But yeah, I think it was a lot of that, man. It was a lot of just being in my head and not being able to break through who I thought I was or what I thought I was here to do, you know, how life was coming after me. Like, just it's a lot. For sure. I think a lot of people are in that place, though.
That moment when you went from, why is this happening to me, to how is this happening for me? Do you recall what actually incited that moment? Was there a specific book, specific mentor that led you on that path?
I don't know if there's a specific moment. I don't think there was a specific input that happened. I think it was me starting to dive into reading books and listening to podcasts and diving into things that made me question. I just asked different questions in general that just allowed me to prompt and realize the power of my focus and changing my focus. I think there wasn't anything specific, though. I think there was just, I was just taking in as much as I could because I wanted to change my inputs.
Going back to Psycho-Cybernetics, was there one lesson or one key insight that you took away from it that has served your life?
Yeah, I think of when people would go in to get surgery, plastic surgery, and they would leave the plastic surgery and the guy did what they wanted done and they still looked at themselves the same. And they were mad at him because they didn't see a difference, but it was just them that couldn't see the change within themselves. And so that was such like a powerful realization for me. It was like, there's nothing that's going to happen. There's nothing that I can accomplish. There's nothing that I can do that's going to change my perception of myself. It's internal. It is such an internal job, and we don't want to admit that. We don't want to address that. And so we're all looking for external things to validate ourselves, for our ego to feel good. But I think it was just such an awareness of my perception of myself needed to be solid now, not when I achieve said goal or not when I achieve said status or whatever that looks like, but rather it goes back to that quote. It's like, all that matters is how you feel about yourself when you're by yourself. And most people don't feel good about themselves when they're by themselves.
How do you feel now by yourself?
There's a book called The High Five Habit by Mel Robbins. And it sounds subtle, but it's like, you'll go in the mirror and you'll give yourself a high five because you want to be best friends with yourself. And I truly feel like my best friend is myself. And that sounds crazy, but I feel like I am in such a good place with myself. And I'm always trying to get better and try to, you know, build a better relationship with myself, because there's no end to this game, right? Like, the whole journey of life is to enjoy getting better. But I feel great, man. I really, truly, right where I'm at now, I feel great.
You know, in some ways, our relationship with ourselves is the most permanent relationship. And my friend Steve likes to say there's a second relationship. The relationship you have with life is the other most permanent relationship. How you see life. Is life, you know, for you? Is it against you? Is the whole world against you? And so I'm curious, what is your relationship with life? How has it evolved over the last 3 or 2 years?
Yeah. I say this so much in podcasts, but I recently read a book called Letting Go, and I recommend it to everyone, by David Hawkins. And the reason I bring that book up is because something that I used to struggle with and I'm still trying to get better at, and I think we all are, is being able to detach ourselves from a pursuit, a goal, money, whatever that looks like. And so I think for me, growing up, it was always that life is happening to me, that we just took on the victim mindset. And more so now, it's the question that prompts a better answer of, how is this happening for me? I really feel like life is working out for me. I think that's a belief that I've taken on, that life is working out for me in every way. And so being able to see that and expand my time horizons of what I look of things, instead of thinking that something bad happens today, that means it's bad, but rather, what if this leads to something good in 3 years from now? I just can't see it yet. And really just being curious about the things that are happening in my life and holding on to the belief that life is happening for me.
Yeah, it reminds me of something I learned from psychedelics, is this idea of you never know how this moment will affect the next moment and the next moment. And so before you judge a moment as bad, you just step back and you become neutral and you say, well, this looks scary or this looks off, but it might serve me. It might be a gift. It might be a blessing in some sense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think we can judge moments. We could judge feelings even. Like you can say a bad feeling is a bad feeling, that in itself, but it's like you framing it as such is what makes it such. And that's really what our entire life is made up of is the way that we perceive things. And if we could change our perception of events or experiences, well, our suffering will decrease like no other. And that's the thing that most people deal with is they suffer. But it's all self-inflicted, most of it.
One of the lessons that was key in your journey was realizing that most of the work is unlearning, not learning. Unlearning the beliefs we have around ourselves. I'm curious, what beliefs did you unlearn in the last 2 years to become who you are today?
I think that being young is an asset and not a liability. I think when I first started my coaching business, my podcast, everything that I was doing, I was 17 years old. I had no idea what I was doing, but I knew I wanted to help people. I knew I wanted to have an impact on the world. And I knew I just felt called to do, like step down this path. But obviously most people struggle with imposter syndrome. And that was something that I struggled with. I think now imposter syndrome is a good thing. I seek it. I see it as like, if I'm not feeling imposter syndrome, I'm probably not in rooms that I want to be in. I'm probably the smartest person in the room if I don't feel imposter syndrome, right? Like I want to feel imposter syndrome. I want to go towards the things that make me feel uncomfortable because that means I'm growing. That means I'm expanding. So I think a belief that I've changed is rather than seeing imposter syndrome as like a bad thing, I've reframed it as something that I should seek. And I say this with clients too. I've realized it with working with clients because they put themselves in positions to actually succeed. And it's just such a good reframe I think a lot of people need to take on.
It reminds me of something Jen Sincero said, that she constantly had to become uncomfortable to go from her journey of poverty to abundance of money, and that she hired a coach as well. And, you know, he or she was like telling her to do things that were making her very uncomfortable, but she finally was ready for it. And she was like, she leaned into doing one uncomfortable thing every single day, no matter what. And her life changed forever within a year.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring her up too specifically, because I just met her at the Lewis House event.
Oh, no way.
A few weeks ago. Yeah, I love Jen. Love Jen. Her books are so impactful, and I recommend them to everyone because it's just such a... Her story is amazing. And as you said right there, yeah, like it's proof of concept, really. It really is.
How was the Lewis House event, and what did you take out of it for yourself?
You know, people ask me this. Other people have asked me this as well, and I think there isn't anything that I took away. And what I mean by that is, like, I think people go into that expecting like to have like such a massive breakthrough leaving it, and I think for me it was just reinforcing the thinking big. I think a lot of us think really small. We don't think big enough. And just seeing Lewis on stage, seeing other people on stage, I seen Jen on stage, just seeing that kind of stuff, just it's good to be around that. It's like investing into a coaching program. Like you, when you do that, you start surrounding yourself with people that are doing what you want to do. So when you go to those things like that, it's like you're surrounding yourself with people. If that's something that you want to do, again, it's like if that's something that you want to do, just surrounding yourself with those kind of people just opens your mind up again to be like, yo, like maybe I don't see this every day, but when I do see it, it's like, oh, it's so much more tangible than we give it credit for. So I would say that's the takeaway.
It reminds me of what someone said, that one of the biggest problems we have is a lack of imagination. It's like we can't imagine a life mm-hmm. big enough, so we revert to the smallest, most average goals.
Yeah, I had Gay Hendricks on my podcast. I'm not sure if you know who he is, but
yes, if, the big
if
leap.
People don't, yeah, absolutely, amazing human, and he's someone that I admire in the way that he lives his life, like. man is like 78, like he's in his late 70s, and he is excited as hell every single day because he has not lost his wonder. And he says that the number one thing that we have in life is our ability to wonder, to really question things and to think bigger than we do think at, because we accept things as face value rather than questioning what could be possible if it was different. Like, what could be possible if I did step on stage, or like, what could be possible if I did start a podcast, all of these things. But we don't question enough. And that's why I go back to the question that you ask yourself. You ask yourself better questions, man, it really can change your life. Changing that question that I ask myself from why is this happening to me to how is this happening for me? I look at that in every single quote unquote bad thing that has happened in my life has reframed and set me down a different path.
You once said, you will never outpace your idea of yourself. And this ties into Gay Hendricks and the upper limit problem of we will not exceed how we see our own self-image. And so I'm curious, how do you tackle that issue that comes up within all of us, this self-limitation?
Keeping the promises I make to myself. I think someone once asked me, what is your definition of success? And I said, my definition of success is my standards. Like, if I do what I said I was going to do, I'm succeeding. I don't care about the result, because I can only focus on the input, not the output. Like, I can only focus on what I actually am doing, not so much what that results in. And so if I just focus on showing up every single day, doing the things I said I would do, well, I'm successful. And I'm gonna define that as success rather than defining $1,000 or whatever, something that you can't tangibly control, that shouldn't be defined as success, at least in my opinion. That's my definitions specifically. So keeping the promises I make to myself, if I'm showing up and doing what I said I would do, then my perception of myself is going to increase. If I said I'm going to do something and I don't do it, well, my perception of myself is going to decrease. And that results in everything else in your life.
I really loved your interview with Kyle Cease. It was such a spiritual talk. And on your podcast, you've talked a lot about your entrepreneurial and your coaching journey. But I'm curious, what has your spiritual journey looked like?
It's been a constant unlearning of having things figured out in some sorts. That's what's coming through me. That's the download I just got. I think a lot of us go through life feeling like there's some certain way we should go through life. Like by the time you're 30, you should have kids and a house and a white picket fence and whatever. But just in general of like the constant of the uncertainties of life and being okay with that. I think it goes back to the book that I was just reading, Letting Go, because that's what we talked a lot about, David Hawkins, on the podcast, of just being able to surrender to where you are instead of being so focused on where you'd like to go or what you want to do. I don't remember who said it, but a quote that really resonated with me recently is that life is what happens while you're planning for the future. And as much as I love to live with intention, I love to live with intention now, not looking so forward that I miss out on right now.
What is your view on God and spirituality in general? I'm curious.
I think that's a thing that I'm wrestling with day in and day out. I think it's something that I believe in, a higher power of some sort. I don't think that we just got here and all this has happened just out of nowhere. But I have never been subscribed to any certain religion or anything in any way. I think I'm just an open book, just being, I'm just living for today, man. I don't even think about that too much, truthfully.
I understand. Have you thought too much about the true nature of reality and what is this actual place? Like, why are we here as souls?
I think sometimes, but really, like, I think I'm just trying to live my best life. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just trying to see, a friend of mine has his bio says, I'm just trying to see how good life can get. And I really resonate with that. I'm really resonating with that. I'm just trying to see how good life can get. Like, take away all of the way that things should be, or like the concepts like that. Like, I like diving into those concepts sometimes, but I think it just takes me away from where I'm at, because I will never really know. Like, we just won't. There's no amount of science. There's no amount of anything that's ever going to define how this is all happening. It just doesn't make sense. Everything is too imperfect and perfect at the same time for it to make sense. And so I try not to overanalyze that, because it takes me away from where I'm at.
I love what you said. Everything is too perfect and imperfect at the same time.
Yeah.
It's very poetic. also that quote from your friend reminds me of something Noah Lampert said. He said, instead of worrying, try knowing everything is good. You know, like feel into that, because we worry so much and we miss out on the perfection of the present moment.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's all it is focusing on the next thing rather than, like, you're focused on step four when you're on step one, and takes you away from step one and living with intention and living and actually enjoying it. Like, I believe the purpose of life is to enjoy the passage of time. And if I'm always focused on trying to figure out everything else, well, then I miss out on enjoying the passage of time. And that's what my core purpose, I believe, is.
Do you feel like the passage of time for you is framed through the lens of mortality? Because on your, was it your ankle? You have a tattoo that says Memento Mori.
Yeah, I have Memento Mori and Amor Fati on my right calf. I got that recently. I think, yeah, I would say through mortality. Just because I think, like I said, I lost a lot of family young. And so like when people look at me like I'm 20 and I'm so young, I'm like, yeah, but I got 17 years, like, is the way that I think of it, right? Like, my father and uncle passed at 37. We only have so much time. And so, yeah, when I think of enjoying the passage of time, I think of, like, literally today, this exact moment, me speaking with you. Not what's going to happen after this podcast, not what's going to happen later today, this exact moment.
And so, Memento Mori is remember your death. Uh-huh. And then Amor Fati
is, love your fate.
Love your fate. What do you think your fate is?
Your fate is everything that happens. So in a sense of, it's kind of like believing that everything that is happening for you in its own entirety. It's like everything that's going to happen, whether it's bad or good, it's like love your fate. Believe that it's happening for you. It's going to move in that way. Because if it happened, it was supposed to happen, rather than trying to resist that, oh, this shouldn't have happened, or this isn't how my life is supposed to turn out. More so appreciate everything that's happening and believing it's for your better good.
Do you believe in destiny or free will or a mix of both?
I think a mix of both. I think everything is and. I don't like the either or mindset on things. Like, you can be stressed, or you can either be successful or have time freedom. It's like, no, it can be both. You can be making progress, or you can be in a constant state of stagnation. It's like, no, there's both. There's seasons to everything. And there's different times for everything that's going on. I think I really am entertaining the and mindset instead of the either or. That's been at my core for sure.
In the last 2 years of building your podcast, building your coaching business, what have been the biggest challenges that you've had to face and navigate?
I think for me, it's been the constant knowing that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. I think at our core, it's like we all have a should in our mind of like, this is where I should be, or this is what I should be doing, or this is how things should be. And that just doesn't serve anybody. And it hasn't served me. And I think that's something that I'm continuously trying to unlearn, is that I should be somewhere else, or I should be doing something else, or I should be further along. All these shoulds that I place in myself, like Tony Robbins would say, you're shoulding all over yourself. And it's terrible. And it doesn't serve anybody. And so I think it's the constant knowing that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, even though I feel like today I should be 4 days ahead. Like, you know what I mean by that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Exactly. It especially comes up with time management.
Yeah.
You feel like there's so much to do, so much you want to do, so much you should do, so much you got to follow up on. Yep. How do you personally manage your time, and what have been some of the key tenets for you to manage the podcast, manage your business, your clients, your personal life, playtime, you know, like versus work life? What does your balance look like? Or is there such a thing as balance for you?
I believe in work-life harmony, not so much balance. Because I think people think of balance like, okay, 9 a.m. to 5 a.m. every single day. And after that, then I get to do whatever I want. That's balance. That's a teeter-totter kind of thing. And I think of harmony as the sense of being able to do, at least for as an entrepreneur, I'm able to do what I want when I want for the most part. And so if I'm able to do that, that's a harmony of like, there's going to be days where I work 12 hours, and there's going to be days where I work no hours. There's going to be days I work 3 hours. There's going to be days I work 6 hours. Like because that's not balance. I don't think people would see that as balance. I just think it's going through the motions and finding a harmony of things, of like not pushing myself to this extent where I can't show up tomorrow kind of thing. I think something that I've lived on for the past couple of years is Google Calendar. If I take time off, if I am going to schedule a walk-in at 6 p.m., it's in my calendar. It isn't happening. If I have a call, this was on my calendar. Like every single thing that is going on is going to be on my calendar or in my notebook. And I am religious about my notebook. Like every single thing that I do, I write it off like this is what I just did. And then I go to the next thing and that's what I just did. Because so many people are wasting the time that they have because they don't even know what they're doing with their time. And I don't want to be in that habit. I've been in that habit. That's what I help people with. I don't want people to waste their time. I want people to live with intention because that's our most precious resource is time.
What do you use for your to-do list? Is it just a notebook with a list or is there some more complicated system?
Just a notebook. I used to use a complicated system. I used to have a Notion document of like a planner and a bunch of stuff, but I find myself that I never went to it. I'm always going back to writing down something down. And so that might not be the best way to go about it. Can't really track things as perfect. I'm going to have to go through 1,000 notebooks a year, but it just makes it a lot easier for me. What's the three most important tasks of my day? And then if I have small maintenance tasks that I have to do later in the day, put those down a little bit. But like, what are like the three core most important things? I don't remember who said it. I want to say it was Gary Keller maybe, wrote the one thing. If you have anything over three tasks, you're not working efficiently. You're not working effectively because you just have your spread way too thin. So like, what are like the three core things that have like the biggest impact on my day and then move from there? But too many people are working on 1,000 things and not really things that move the needle.
And between your daily tasks and the zoomed out version of your life, like the core goals for the year or even the decade, how do you switch between those time horizons?
I try not to, like I said earlier with Eric Jorgensen, like he's not setting goals for next year, like just to see how it would work. Not that I don't set goals, but I really try to be where I'm at. Like I think of a broad version of like, okay, what's the direction that I want to go rather than what's the goal that I want to achieve? Because if you focus on the direction, like you're going to move down that path. It's just inevitable that you achieve said goal. But if I'm always focused on the goal or where I want to be in 10 years from now, dude, in 3 years from now, my idea of where I want to be in 10 years is going to be different. And so why even shoot for it? I don't want to say it's a waste of time, but I just feel like it takes you away from, you know, doing what you feel you should be doing right now. So I try not to be too overly focused on that kind of stuff, realistically.
Stay in the present moment.
Yeah, I mean, when you're present, that's when you're able to be most intentional about where you want to go. Because where you want to go in 10 years from now is going to be different now than it is, and even maybe a month from now, like it might be different. But that, again, it goes back to asking the question, what do I really want? And asking that consistently and really being in alignment with that.
I know daily walks are a big part of your life.
Oh, yeah.
When you go for a walk, what are you thinking about?
The trees. I'm thinking about my feet on the ground. I'm thinking about the sky. I'm looking at the sky. Recently, I've been going on walks without any kind of input, just straight walking. So usually nothing. I'm usually not thinking about anything. I usually try to see it as, you know, our mind is going to analyze everything that I can. So sometimes I'll think about what I have to do throughout the day and kind of like run through the schedule of like what's going to happen and how it's going to go and how I'd like it to go and all of that kind of stuff. But really, I do some voice memos as well. I don't know if you've ever done it, but a lot of people journal and I'm not the best. I'm not a guy for journaling. I after like three lines, I get tired. My hands just like, I don't feel like it. So I'll record some voice memos on my phone. Like it's almost like a checkup with myself, just kind of affirming to myself, you're doing good, man. Like everything's working in the direction that you want to go in. This is what I did yesterday. Like literally like speaking to myself kind of, again, it's like talking about earlier. It's like, how do you feel about yourself when you're by yourself? That's my time with when I'm by myself, man. And that's my time for me to really get in touch with that part of myself that I want to be in alignment with.
There's huge power in just talking your thoughts out loud with yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Because when it's in your head, it's like you can run in parallel 100 different thoughts. Mm-hmm. But when you are speaking out loud, you have to synthesize it into one coherent sentence.
Yeah.
One of my friends, Steve, he likes to do something he calls the airing of grievances. So he'll go on a walk and he'll just out loud to himself only air out what he feels he doesn't like about life. And then he'll do the exact opposite, what he loves about life.
Really?
And that process helps him to basically synthesize like exactly what's working, what's not working, what could be going better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so powerful. I don't think we do it nearly enough. And I think a lot of people don't know what they want. Don't know even like a lot of people, You ever feel like you know someone more than they know themselves?
Sure. I mean, people are more transparent than they realize. So you can read someone because you don't have their baggage. You can see clearly, objectively, where the bugs are in their software. And that's what, you know, coaching is in some degree.
Exactly. And so, like, there's self-coaching too. Like, there's that ability to be able to, like, really ask yourself those kind of questions, but we don't. And so going on walks is just me, like, stream of consciousness, just blurting out everything I need to get off my chest or everything that I need to get out of my head. And maybe that doesn't even sound like a voice memo, but that's literally just speaking it out or just looking at the clouds and think, man, nothing's really that serious. Like, my problems are not that big. Like, just getting out of your head and going on a walk, being in movement, just feels good, man. It's proven to make you live longer too. So people that don't walk need to walk more. That's for sure.
Do you have a coach right now?
Yeah, I have two.
You have two, one for business and...
One for coaching. So I have a coach about my coaching business and mindset as well. And then I also have a fitness coach. I've been wanting to gain weight for a long time, and having someone to hold me accountable to just be like, this is what you're doing Monday, this is what you're doing Tuesday, this is what you're doing Wednesday, this is what you're doing Thursday. Are we gaining weight? What does the calories look like? Taking in the macros, all of that kind of stuff. I always have a coach.
What are some of the key lessons that you've been learning from your business coach lately?
I think I'm always learning. I think a lot of the lessons that I learn happen through action, through implementation. And so I think it's just going back to the knowing that usually a business coach or any coach for the most part is not going to give you the answers that you're looking for, but they're going to tell you exactly what you need to do. And it's probably likely that you already know what you need to do. It's that accountability that we feel like is not that important, but it's so important. That's what I would say. It's just going back to the fact that this guy doesn't have anything, like there's no magic that this person has. It's like just doing what I know I need to be doing and making sure that he's holding me accountable to show up for that thing for the most part.
You once tweeted, decide to love yourself. All that matters is how you feel about yourself when you are by yourself. Nothing and no one can make you more whole than you already are. Tell me a bit about your journey with self-love.
Yeah, it's been at the core of everything, man. Realistically, I think, like I said earlier, like that quote is at my core. Because I grew up not really having a good relationship with myself. And so not perfecting it, but making that the core of everything. Like if you could accomplish everything in the world, man, I've been in rooms with people that are making millions of dollars a month to millions of dollars a day to millions of dollars a year. Like people that are doing amazing things that are just not happy, that don't feel good about themselves, that are just trying to think that next million or that next goal that they achieve is going to bring everything to them. And I've seen it with clients as well. It's like, okay, once I achieve this goal, then I'm going to be happy. Then I'm going to be successful. Then I'm going to see myself as a success. And I don't want to see that. I want to come from that basis. Like I am a success. I do love myself. I am everything and more, and nothing outside of me that is ever going to replace how I feel about myself. And so a book called The Gap and the Gain is something that I recommend to a lot of high achievers by Dr. Benjamin Hardy. His podcast actually coming out next week, which was an awesome podcast for us to have a conversation about. And it's kind of like that mindset of like happiness. You have to start from happiness. Nothing's going to bring you happiness. You have to start like, I am happy and I'm going to move towards this goal. And so that's the same thing for self-love. Like I love myself and I'm going to be moving forward because I love myself, not because I'm trying to love myself. And I think that's something that we kind of see as like woo-woo. It's not that big of a deal, but I put a lot of prominence on that for sure.
Are there any practices or processes that you use to tap into that self-love?
Walks, man. Walks is big, and meditation is big as well. I've made a habit of meditating for at least 20 minutes every day just to sit with yourself, because I have a problem with always being in movement, like always meaning to be moving forward in some regard. And meditation is something that's like, okay, bud, you got to take a seat. You got to take a seat and just be with yourself and really like what thoughts do come up and address those instead of allowing them to just happen in the background, because that's what's happening for a lot of people.
What role did courage play in your life so far?
Huge role, I would say, unconsciously. When I stepped into coaching in my podcast, I invested a lot of money into a coaching program to even step down the space because I really didn't know what I was getting myself into. And I guess I had the courage to take that leap, to step out of what I knew and step into something that I had absolutely no idea what I was getting myself into, to be able to go down this path to begin with, I would say.
You mentioned like when you told your mom you invested $2,500 into the coaching pro. What was her reaction?
She trusted it. And it's crazy because that was only the first investment. Like that wasn't, I think it was $7,500 that I invested at 17. And dude, she looked at me like, okay, I at that time I was taking six months into becoming a real estate agent. That's what I thought I was going to do. That's the path I thought I was going to go down. And out of nowhere, I'm like, I just spent $2,500. It's only the first investment. Like it's not even, that's not all. There's still more into a coaching program. She had no idea what I was doing. I mean, I think some of my family, some people still don't even understand what I do, but that's okay. It was terrifying though, for sure.
Just to circle back to the gap and the gain, can you describe for the listeners who haven't read the book, what is the core idea of the gap and the gain?
Absolutely. So most people are coming from the gap, and the gap is looking at yourself from this is where you are and this is where you'd like to go. So you're basing your self-image, the way that you feel about yourself, your idea of what success is, based off of the gap from where you are and where you'd like to be. That's a pretty massive gap. All the things you haven't accomplished, you're looking at all the things that you have to do, how far you have to go. And that's a really limiting place to come from because you're always going to look at yourself as less than. You're never going to feel good about yourself. You're never going to feel like you're a success. The gain is coming from, this is where I started. This is where I'm at. All of the things I have accomplished, all of the things I have done, how far I actually have come, all of the things, because we're always, our mind automatically looks for the next thing, but never do we recognize ourselves for how far we actually have come. And so coming from the gain is something that we feel is going to make us come from limit us, because, you know, that fear of insufficiency is something that drives people really, really far. But coming from the gain is something that you don't have to be coming from a fear of insufficiency just to be acting. You know, you can act without stress. You can act without failure, or not failure, overwhelm, and just having to feel like you have to always feel like you're behind, but you don't have to feel like you're behind to be making progress, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. When you talked to Benjamin Hardy, what was the key takeaway that you took away from that conversation?
He's a great guy. I would say that. I would say he's a great, great human. You know, you meet a lot of people that are in this space. At least I have met a lot of people that I look up to, that I've read their books, and some people are nothing like you'd expect, and other people blow you away from the kind of person that they are. And Benjamin was a great guy, I would say. That's the core thing, because I've already read his books. I already dove into all of his stuff. It wasn't anything that I was specifically going to get out of it. It was just more so like being able to speak with someone that I once read their book and admire, and then to be able to speak with them, I just, still blows me away that I'm able to do that kind of stuff. It just excites me.
How often has it happened where someone you thought was one thing ended up being completely different person?
Every few weeks, every few months, I'll meet someone and I'll think, man, that's not everything that I thought. And that's a good thing. I think like there can be negative to it, but there can also be positive to it. Like it just kind of reminds you to be like, hey, like you don't need to be setting expectations, because they only, like, not everyone's going to meet your expectations, and that's okay.
Is it like that they were different personality, or what was the gap between the expectations and the actual person?
I think some people will talk about how ego is a big thing, about how you need to be able to like push your ego down, or be able to detach from your ego, not let that drive you. And some of those same people are so submersed in that, that they don't realize that their ego is driving them.
Mm-hmm. What is your concept of your own ego at this moment?
I mean, I think for me, ego is something, I mean, I've read Ego is the Enemy. One book that I recommend to everyone is A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle, because it's just so powerful for you to recognize that you are not your ego. You need to be able to really separate yourself from that. I think for me, it's the constant knowing that I am not the voice in my head and I am not my perception of myself. It goes back to everything that we've been speaking about, really, is like, you being able to identify that and recognize that and actually internalize that, not just conceptually understand it, but like internalize it. I think that's the thing that we're always, I mean, that's why we go down any kind of spiritual path to begin with, is because we see that and we think, man, this is a lot of work. Life is a lot of work. Like, the work is never ending. I always say problems replace problems. Like, we all think that that next level of life that we're going to get to is going to be like, oh, perfect. Like, I got here. And then you get different problems.
Yeah. And it's such a you funny actually thing get that... bigger problems as you become more successful. The more successful, the most successful people are dealing with more challenging problems. And yeah. People don't realize that. They think if they get money or success, they're going to, life is going to be easy. But in fact, it's kind of the opposite. You're taking on more responsibility. And in some ways, that's good. It's like lifting heavier weights at the gym, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
One thing I wanted to ask you was your podcasting journey. What was the first inspiration to start the podcast? What was the inception of that?
Really, bro, it came from my intuition. When I was younger, I told my mom and my sister I wanted to be a motivational speaker. The reason I said that was because I didn't know what a podcast was at the time. And so if I didn't know what a podcast was, I couldn't say I wanted to be a podcaster. But what I knew I was I was always curious about people, and I always wanted to ask questions. I always wanted to ask questions, and I always wanted to be in a constant state of trying to be better, like just better myself while bettering other people. And so, dude, I wanted to start that podcast. It came from the conception of like, you can too. I've seen people doing amazing things in the world, and a lot of people having so much talent in things, but not believing that they could do something. So they never put themselves in a position to succeed. And I never want people to do that. I want people to like recognize like, yo, like we're only here for a certain amount of time. You have to put yourself out there. You have to put yourself in a position to succeed, because if you're not doing that, why are you here? You're wasting the time that you're given when some people wasn't given any time. And so it really just came from me wanting to help people and feeling like I always say like I felt called to do it rather than being pushed towards doing it. A lot of people are doing a job that they feel like they're pushed towards doing it. They have to do it. And I wake up every day and I'm like, man, this is doesn't make sense to me. I get to do this kind of stuff. And I think you probably feel the same. It's why we do it, right?
You feel the call. Yeah. And intuition. I'm glad you brought up that word a few times in this conversation. For me, it's been one of the core keys of my life is getting a deeper trust and deeper sense of my gut feeling.
Yeah.
Because if you can truly hear that inner voice, and sometimes it's quiet, sometimes it's a whisper, if you can hear it, nothing will go wrong, because it's like the path is laid out for you. You just have to listen. And I'm curious, have you always had a strong sense of intuition, or was that something that you developed? And if so, what helped you?
No, I think it was when I invested into the coaching program, really. I think that's when it got louder. I had Light Watkins on my podcast recently. He's a spiritual meditation teacher, bestselling author. He's done a bunch of things. And when we were on the pod, he was talking about how a lot of people have their intuition as a still small voice. And so they don't hear it. And so you can't really go towards something if you're not hearing the intuition. The more that you put yourself in positions to, the more you put yourself in a position to hear that voice, the louder it gets. You want it to be like an annoying loud voice in your head so that you can move down that path, right? And so for me, when I invested into that coaching program, it was like, I'm going down this path to become a real estate agent. And I knew that the only reason I was doing that was because college didn't make any sense. And this was the path. This was the only other path that I knew. And when I learned about the coaching program, I thought, this feels so right. Like, this is the path. This has to be the path. And so that was my intuition, like becoming more aware. And then with the podcast and then with everything else, it's got louder and louder.
You've done nearly 200 episodes of the podcast.
Yeah.
What have been some of the most interesting lessons you've learned on how to be a better interviewer, a better podcaster?
I think silence is really big, and I'm continuously trying to get better at that. After someone speaks, like actually be okay with the silence rather than having to ask another question, or having like just a preset, okay, I know where I want to go next, but like actually being present in it. I think especially for a lot of podcasters, like they want to have preset questions going into the podcast, and I like it. I still do, but not just preset questions, but like have a direction that it's supposed to go. And I think the best podcasts happen when you go down a rabbit hole that you didn't expect to go down. And allowing that to actually happen has been something that's been big for me.
Yeah, letting go of the preconceived agenda and just staying present. That's been one of the big lessons for me as well.
Yeah.
Have there been anything you would tell your episode one self? Any mistakes to avoid or things to look out for?
No, I think I think it's kind of going back to the amor fati kind of thing. Like, just love your fate. Like, just I don't like to look back and be like, oh, I could have done this or this could have been better, because it only just takes me away from where I'm at. And it just has a should connotation to it. Like, I should have, I could have. Yeah, cool. I could have, but I'm where I'm at right now. And I'm really grateful for where I'm at, even if it's not where I'd like to be, even if it's not everything that I'm looking for. So I try not to look back too much.
How do you typically prep for your episodes? How involved is the prep, and what kind of preparation do you typically do?
I do at least, I listen to at least two podcasts that they've been on. Try to go to their website, try to go to their Instagram, go through their Twitter, go through everything that I can. I really try to bring out, okay, maybe it's not gonna be the best interview that they've ever done, but I want to bring up something that hasn't been brought up in another podcast. I think a lot of people do that, where they'll bring up something where they'll ask a question that every other interviewer asks, and it's like, you don't differentiate yourself by any means. And so that's what I want to do. Like, bringing people on, I want them to remember that it was a good interview. It wasn't just another podcast that they had on.
Gotcha. What about reaching out to guests? Any tips or advice you have for other podcasters?
I would say just reach out. And that sounds like such a straightforward answer, but man, you have no idea how many people have reached out to me going, how do you get these guests on your show? And it's like, I reach out. I've literally had people ask me, how do I reach out? And I go, I send the DM. I send the email. Like, I just literally do the thing. It's not, I always go back to this saying that life is simple, not easy. Like, we know, most of the time we know what we need to do, but rarely do we actually show up enough times to actually get said result. Like, so you'll reach out to a pod, like say the Seth Godin, for example, like he'll go on a lot more podcasts than people think, but because they don't reach out, they're never going to get him. And it's the same thing for anyone else. It's like, you just have to reach out. That's all I would say, because anything more is just overcomplicating it.
It goes back to what you said about putting yourself out there, just taking that step.
Mm-hmm. I think the imposter syndrome too, like, who am I to have this person on my show? It's like, dude, think bigger. Stop shooting so low, because shooting so low, like, is just holding you back. Like, you can get bigger guests, but the reason you're not is because you're not shooting for it.
James, it's time for the lightning round. What are you most grateful to have experienced in your life?
Loss.
Loss in what sense?
Loss in general. Like, loss of family members, loss of beliefs, loss of everything. And I say that because I go back to the love your fate kind of thing. Like, when I grew up, I had so much resistance, feeling like I wish I had a father, I wish I had these people in my life. And now where I'm at, I sit from a standpoint of, I am so damn grateful that that happened, because I would not, I've been told I have an old soul so much, and I don't think I would have an old soul or a different perspective on my life if everything in my life didn't happen.
It's paradoxical in a sense, right? Because when people think of loss, they think tragedy, or they think grief. And I'm sure some of that has come up for you as well.
Of course.
But to transmute that into gratitude is incredibly powerful.
Absolutely.
What do you most value in your friends?
Trust. I think if I'm able to trust you, if I'm not able to trust you, or if I'm not able to, yeah, I would just say trust. I think a lot of people present themselves as something and then are something else. And so if I can actually trust that your word is your word, that's what I think is the most important. That's what defines your character, defines who you are, or at least who you perceive yourself to be.
How much of trust do you think comes from within our own perception of people? Because, you know, like, people who don't trust others tend to receive that reflection back. And then the more trusting people tend to receive more trust in return.
Yeah. I think when I think of trust, it's hard to think of a word that can, like, condense what I mean by trust, but I guess trust isn't the best word to use. I guess reliability maybe is a better word. Like, if my car were to break down and I'm in the highway and I need to call someone, can I rely on you to come and, like, do I trust you enough to be like, you're gonna come and pick me up and help me out kind of thing? You know what I mean? So I think the reliability is the sustainability. Like, if I can rely on you, then I can trust that this is going to be a friendship, not just a something that only lasts for a certain amount of time, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. What is one of your favorite movies and why?
Shawshank Redemption. I recommend that movie to a lot of people. I think why, it's just a great movie. I think the storyline was really great. I went into it thinking it was going to be bad. And the reason that it was so great was because I think I went into it thinking it was going to be bad.
Yeah.
I would say that. And it's just a movie that's like, it's old as hell, but I recommend it to everyone.
It's fantastic. And it also ties into your life path, because one of the core themes of the movie is persistence and grit. Yep. And continuing to keep going.
Yeah.
For me also, the best movie experiences have been ones with no expectations.
Yeah.
When it ends up surprising you, it's just the most fantastic feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely surprising.
What is one life lesson you learned from your mom?
To love unconditionally. I think I had a guy on my podcast almost a year ago now, when I think about it, Cliff Weitzman. He's the CEO of Speechify. And
he's great.
Great guy. And when he was on the show, I asked him, what are like some of the overlooked things that have allowed you to put yourself out in the world and succeed? And he said that his family, his mom and his father always believed in him and always gave him like unconditional love to the ability to be able to take the leaps into the things that, you know, maybe some other people didn't believe that they had the position to do so. And so I don't think I'd invest into a coaching program to do really anything in my life if I didn't have the unconditional love to know that I got someone by my side, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. Do you have a favorite quote?
Yeah, I would say that all that matters is how you feel about yourself when you're by yourself. I go back to that one because at its core, the biggest regret that people have in their life is that I wish I lived a life true to myself and not one that others expected of me.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. Most people don't feel good about themselves when they're by themselves because they're not living in alignment with what they truly want, but they're living in alignment with what they think they should want or what other people want for them. And so I think at my core, it reminds me of that.
Do you recall the first book that made an impact on you?
Yeah, it's behind me. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that, which is like a, it was that book and it was, I think it was Rich Dad, Poor Dad and Napoleon Hill. I can't think of the name for some reason.
Think and Grow Rich?
Yeah, Think and Grow Rich. Don't know why I couldn't think of that. But yeah, those two were two books that just changed my mindset. And brought me down the path of like, oh, I do like reading. I just need to find books that I actually improve my life.
Which part of Think and Grow Rich, if you can recall, sort of had that impact on you when reading it?
That like our thoughts are like, we cast spells, like our thoughts cast spells, and being able to understand that and the power of like the words that you use every single time. And I do this on client calls too. It's the funniest thing when someone will say something and I'll catch them with the words that they're using. I'm like, and they'll immediately catch themselves because they know that I'll do it. But we use words that limit us so much in our life, and it just becomes something that we don't recognize that it happens. But the words that we use, and I'm so diligent about the words that I use in my life. Like I've exchanged should for shame. I've exchanged failure for feedback. Like in every way that I can, I try to replace words that don't serve me with words that do serve me.
What do you mean by should for shame?
Usually when we're telling ourselves that we should do something, we're shaming ourselves for not doing it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So like if I should be further along, then I'm shaming myself for being where I'm at.
And so how do we overcome that?
Get rid of should. Should isn't real. Should is an expectation of how things should be, but that's not, if that's literally your resistance to how things are.
So if someone comes to you and they say, look, I feel so much guilt because I feel like, or shame, I feel like I'm not where I'm supposed to be, what can they do?
Take on the belief that I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. That's what I said earlier, is like your ability to take on that belief, whether it's true or not true, you got to ask the question, like, does this serve me? So taking on the belief like, okay, I'm not where I should be, doesn't serve you. It likely doesn't serve you. It might make you work a little bit harder because you're coming from a place of insufficiency, but how do you feel about yourself when you're by yourself? Probably not too good. And so like, if that doesn't serve you, get rid of the belief. I had, I'm bringing up so many people that I've had in the podcast because I've just taken so much from it. But Derek Sivers, I had him on my podcast a few months ago, one of my favorite interviews I've done. And he talks about a new book that he's coming out with called Useful, Not True. We have a lot of beliefs that are useful, but they're not true. And that's like the belief that I'm exactly where I like I'm exactly where I should be might not be true. Like maybe I should be further along, but it's useful for me and I'm going to take on that belief.
I love that. Yeah, I guess so many people think that something must be true before they can integrate it into their personal matrix of energy. And if you can just...
But why?
Yeah. So at this moment, you're looking at every belief as, is it useful? And if so, doesn't really even matter if it's true or not, as long as it serves you.
Yeah.
Is there an example of another belief that you've taken on in that has been useful for you?
This isn't the best example, but I'm going to give it because I'm just looking at my book, so I'm thinking of this. Some people think that they need to read a whole book through, or it's not like, it doesn't count kind of thing. And I used to be that way where if I felt like if I didn't finish the book, then it didn't count. Something that I'm taking on is that I'm just going to take what I need from the book and move on.
It reminds me of something Naval said of he will read a book until he finds some core idea, something key that works for him, and then he'll stop reading it or he'll give himself permission to stop reading it.
Exactly.
And then the other thing he said is he will return to the same book over and over and just integrate it into his consciousness rather than seeking that dopamine rush of a new book.
Yeah, because that's what we're doing, you know? And I think a lot of people are reading books to put it on their shelf and be like, I read this book. But it's like, right. Did you get anything from the book? Did you actually implement something from the book? Like, what did you learn from it? I used to be that way. And now the way that I look at things is like, I'm going to read a book because I'm struggling with this problem. So I'm going to read that specific book to overcome this specific problem, not to read this book just to say that I read this book.
Right. When you can apply it right away to a specific problem you have, there's nothing like that.
No.
What is one thing your audience would be surprised to learn about you?
It's a good question. That I'm not trying to be the biggest podcaster in the world. Or I'm not trying to, like, my end goal isn't to grow to the best of my ability, if that makes sense. But it is to enjoy the passage of time. Like, if what success looks like for me is loving every day, and that means that I'm making less progress, I'm going to take that all day.
I love that. In the days where you notice that you're not loving the days anymore, what do you do, and what has usually been the cause of that?
Doing things that I think I should do rather than doing things that I actually actively choose to do. Assigning myself things that I don't, like, I think I want to do in the moment, and then I get to the thing and I'm like, man, this isn't everything that I really thought it would be. And the things that get me back to it is like, dude, go on a walk. I'm going to go back to it. But it's like actually asking myself, like, why did that drain me? And why didn't that give me energy? Because if you just keep doing things and expect to understand a pattern without actively like diving deep into why it happened or why you feel a certain way, you're floating through life is what I like to say. You're coasting.
What is happening on a psychological level when we, because I experienced this too, assigning yourself things that you think you should do, you get to the thing and you're like, this is not even what I want to do.
Yep.
Why do we get into those games to begin with? How can we stop that pattern in its tracks the moment we start assigning ourselves tasks that seem juicy and interesting, but actually are not aligned with our actual path?
Yeah, I think two things come up for me. One is not asking enough questions of like just doing things just because we think we should. But like, again, it's like the speaking that I said earlier, it's like, okay, yeah, maybe I should go speak and do that. But do I feel like I should do it? Well, if I don't feel like I feel in alignment with it, well, then I'm not going to go do that thing because it's probably going to take energy away from me rather than give me energy. I would rather record a podcast or do something else, go on a walk. I don't know what that looks like, but asking that question. 2 years ago, I wouldn't ask that question. I just would have said yes and gone and done it. But asking myself that question, actually asking what I want, not what other people want for me. I had a conversation with a friend recently where he said that he wants to be like Tony Robbins. He wants to be the biggest person in the world. He wants to be all about him. He wants to be on stage and do all that kind of stuff. And I thought, really? Like you want to have, like he wants to have a bunch of employees and be a leader and all that kind of stuff. That just doesn't excite me. Like exciting me is speaking with someone every single day and just actually being in the moment of doing that every single day. Like that gives me energy. It doesn't take energy away from me. So I think first, not asking enough questions. And then secondly, it's our innate need for status. If we think of we have We're in a modern time, but we have very old brains. Like, we have the same brain that we had so long ago. And if we understand that status was important back then for a much different reason, well, then we're going to go towards things that are going to give us status because we think that that's something that's going to, you know, put us in a better position, which doesn't always do.
Have you ever faced a decision where you weren't sure whether to say yes or no to it? And when you come to those forks in the road, how do you typically decide?
I always think of how I'm going to feel when I'm on my deathbed. I always think of, like, a lot of people question, should I do this thing? Or, like, what would happen if I fail at this thing? And I always think, what would happen if I never took action on this thing? We're going to get to the end of our life, and most people are going to regret the things that they didn't do rather than the things that they did do, even if they failed at the things that they didn't do or they did do, right? So asking that question always gives me the urgency to be like, okay, then I should take action on this thing. Like, it's just a much different question. I think it gives you a much better perspective on that kind of thing, because a lot of what holds us back is our fear of failure or looking stupid or whatever that looks like. And, like, that's not going to matter when you're at the end of your life. So might as well do the thing if you think that the end of your life, you're going to regret not doing it.
I love that. Thinking about, like, what is the cost of never taking action on this? It wakes you up to this harsh reality.
Yeah, what's the cost of inaction? That's a question I ask. It's probably the most common question I ask clients is, what's the cost of inaction? We don't ask that enough. We always think of the cost of, like, what happens if I fail, or what happens if I look like if I embarrass myself, or whatever the fear is. But, like, what's the cost of inaction? Like, what happens if nothing changes? That's more terrifying.
The clients that most see transformation from working with you versus the ones that do not, what is the difference in their attitudes or the difference in their level of action, level of mindset that you notice?
Well, I'll say when it comes to attitude, I choose to work with people that I believe I can help. So attitude's always there. Like, that's why I'll do, like, an enrollment call, because I want to know if we're even a good fit. I'm not just trying to work with anyone, you know what I mean? So the attitude's always there. Attitude's usually a very similar, like, I attract that kind of person. The difference is that those that succeed are usually the people that do the things that they don't feel like doing in the moment, but are always glad that they did after the fact. And I think that's what the discipline is, right? Is, like, doing what you don't feel like doing right now, but knowing that how you're going to feel after is going to be a hell of a lot better.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Two last questions for you, James. What is one piece of advice that you would like to leave the listener with on how they can lead a more intentional life?
I think on how to live a more intentional life comes down to just asking yourself better questions. And I go back to that at its core, because people aren't even asking questions. Most people are just doing what they think they should do, rather than asking myself, like, what do I really want to do? Like, what do I really feel like I could be in alignment with? Like, what's my zone of genius? Like, most people don't even know their zone of genius because they're not trying enough things. So I would say, to live a more intentional life is just take more action, be okay with failing forward, and seeing failure not as a part of who you are or an example of your self-worth, but more so a understanding that that is not you, and that you can decide to be whoever you want to be, and your actions will reflect that.
I love that. And how would you describe your zone of genius?
Right now, man, I think just asking questions, I think is my zone of genius. Just being curious is my zone of genius, is just asking questions. That's why, like, if you think of coaching and podcasting, in both things, I'm asking questions.
I feel that. I feel that through the pod. That's why I enjoy listening to it. And I think every listener of your pod feels the same.
Yeah.
Well, the final question, James, is what belief are you currently unlearning?
Yeah. It's a good question. Every time I've had someone on the podcast, I've never got an answer really quick. Like, it's crazy. The belief that I'm currently unlearning, I spoke with Eric Jorgensen about this recently, is that I need to be stressed to be making progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. You feel like that pressure gives you that drive?
I think I listened to a podcast with Rich Roll and Chris Williamson recently, and Rich Roll was speaking about how if he gets to the end of a project and he didn't stress enough, he felt like it wasn't good enough. And that's a belief I'm trying to unlearn. It's like, I don't need to be stressed to be making progress. And that's unsettling for my nervous system to like believe and internalize, but it's something that I'm definitely actively trying to do better at.
Is there an example of like, where do you feel the most stress right now in your life?
No, I just think it's a constant state of stress. Like The Gap and the Gain is a really good book for people that if you're struggling with this, where you feel like you always need to be in movement. If you're not moving forward, you're falling behind or you're not good enough. There's all that kind of stuff. Like Alex Hormozi stated it himself, where he says that he's coming from a place of insufficiency and that drives him. But I don't want to come from a state of insufficiency. I want to come from a place that I'm already enough and I can still move forward, rather than coming from a place of anxiety and feeling like I'm going to lose it all at every second. Because Hormozi, it's the reason he's going for like however much $1 billion or whatever he's looking for, is because he still doesn't see himself as enough. And that's a belief that I'm trying to unlearn for sure.
James, thank you so much. It's been a wonderful conversation. Where can people find you if they want to vibe with you?
Yeah, absolutely. James Bracken IV on Instagram, on literally any single platform, that's where I'll be. And then, of course, the You Can Too podcast on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, everywhere you can find that as well.
Awesome. Thank you, man. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You've been listening to The James Zander Trip. A huge thank you to James Bracken for coming on the podcast, spending time with me, and sharing your experiences, your insights, and your wisdom. If you enjoyed this episode, do me a favor and leave a review on Apple or Spotify. It really helps me out. And for more deep conversations, be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and the newsletter by visiting jameszander.com. Thank you for listening, and have a beautiful day. Hey, so if you're still listening and you've made it this far, I want to thank you personally. You are one of the OGs, the true fans of the podcast. Not many people listen to the end, so if you've actually made it this far, I don't take that for granted. I appreciate you so much, and I invite you to reach out to me personally. I'd love to hear what episodes you most enjoyed, what type of topics, and what type of guests you'd love to see in the future. Feel free to message me on Instagram, or you can email me if you sign up to my newsletter and just hit reply to the welcome email. I'll be sure to read it. Now, if you have a moment to rate the podcast on Apple or Spotify, that would help me out so much. I super appreciate that. And if you haven't yet subscribed to the podcast on YouTube, please do me a favor and go to youtube.com/@JamesZanderTrip. I'm trying to get to 1,000 subscribers, so every subscriber counts. One last thing, I have another podcast where I do solo episodes, mostly about psychedelics, but I also share life lessons and all sorts of insights. So if you search for The Microdose, you can find my second podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And finally, I just launched a mindset course called Unlock God Mode. So in the next audio, you'll hear more details about my course. If you're not interested, feel free to skip to the next episode. Again, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. It means the world to me. Feel free to share this episode with a friend that you think might enjoy it, and I'll see you next week. If you enjoyed this episode, you might enjoy my brand new audio course, Unlock God Mode. Unlock God Mode is a 4-week experience where every day you'll get a 15-minute audio lesson that gives you frameworks, tools, and perspectives to upgrade your relationship with life. In the same way that mushrooms give you insights that help you up-level in the video game of life, I designed this course to do the same thing for you. I've compiled every lesson that I learned through psychedelics, through meditation, through my spiritual work, through life. I've put my best tools in this course so that no matter who you are, if you choose to go on this adventure with me, you're going to learn some amazing frameworks. You're going to learn to see life with new eyes. You will improve your relationship with life, and by extension, your life will improve. If you're interested in more details, go to jameszander.com/godmode or use the link in the show notes. Use the promo code SHROOMS for a special discount. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I deeply appreciate you. Feel free to reach out to me through my newsletter. Go to jameszander.com to sign up. I'd love to connect. This episode is sponsored by magicmush.ca. If you're looking for an online dispensary for magic mushrooms, mushroom chocolate, and other high-quality psychedelic products, head over to magicmush.ca and use the promo code JAMES to get 25% off. Thank you for listening, and have a beautiful trip.